And how successful were the different businesses he was involved in? Was he successful?
Who, Harry or Redmond?
Sorry, Redmond.
I think the one that he was least successful with was the stud.
Mm-hmm. Would he have taken advice at this stage from his mother? I mean,
No. He loved his mother. And he was the youngest, wasn't he? Mm. And his mother had a very special draw for her eldest son, Edward, who was in England in Coventry during the war. He was an orthopaedic surgeon. And she loved Edward.
Oh, so there was a little bit of favouritism.
Oh,
in the
God, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then there was Helen, sister, Redmond's sister. And Redmond and Helen were very close. They were very friendly. They were nearer in age as well. And Helen went on to be a very fine book, children's book illustrator, didn't she, Karen?
Writer, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few books that were published. I think they were published in America, were they?
I don't quite know. And they ended up living in St. Melrose, didn't
they?
Yeah,
they did. They lived in St. Melrose for a long time.
Yeah. She married a fellow called O'Cleary. What was his first name?
Dermot
O'Cleary. And Redmond had gone, when it came to Redmond's time, I mean, the Gallagher seemed to go from bang to bust, you know, from boom to bust, a bit like the Celtic Tiger and what we're in at the moment. And at one stage, the father wasn't running the thing too hot. The factory wasn't doing too good. Redmond had been sent to, was it Eton? He went to Ampleforth. With his bowler cap hat and all that. Oh, because that's what the father thought was.
Make a gentleman out of him.
Good Protestant, a good Catholic boarding school. Anyway, but in the meantime, they went bust. So poor Redmond had to come back from Ampleforth with his bowler hat. And he was sent to some school out in Dunleary. So the poor devil. And I remember he went to Ampleforth from the north. And at the train station in Belfast, he put the bowler hat in a brown paper bag because he didn't want anybody to see him. So anyway, he came back from Ampleforth and he really wanted to be an engineer. But the father said, no, you can't be an engineer. You have to go to Germany and learn how to make proper chocolate. So Redmond went off to Germany the first year of Hitler.
1933.
And he worked in a chocolate factory there for a year.
In Dresden, yeah.
And we've beautiful photographs of Dresden before it was bombed. And I don't know, I would love somebody to have them.
Oh, well, they would be priceless, really, to do
I would have thought some museum in Dresden, huh?
Yeah.
So Redmond came back and he had this expertise from his education.
Yeah. Mm.
And where did he go in Dublin again?
Well, he came back to the factory then.
Straight into the factory.
Yeah, and his father was running the factory. And Redmond then, I don't know, he got on very well with his father, did he? He was always very respectful of his father. But
in those days, there was a tendency to a very Victorianism.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That you were very strict. And
I would have thought that Redmond probably said to him, look, I'm back now and I've learned all that I've learned. And, you know, you're going to have to get into the back seat. And I'm going to run the show. Would you agree with that, Karen?
Yeah.
Did that happen?
It did, sort of, 1950.
Although Grandad wrote in his memoirs that on condition that he would give up racing, because he loved racing. Mm. It was a big pastime for Redmond, and Harry said, well, on condition he gave more time
to racing,
less time to racing.
Was he a gambler?
No. He actually used to race motor cars.
Oh, motor
himself.
Cars.
And he made them himself
horses,
in
yeah.
the factory. And he made the leprechaun.
Oh, yes, you must talk to me about these cars, because This is one. Had he a museum of cars? I mean, was he a collector of vintage cars?
No. It was a sort of a gentleman's hobby at the time. This was before Formula One.
He just wanted to. They were practical. He wanted to race them. He wasn't collecting them as such.
No.
He was racing them.
And he had an engineer up in the factory and a mechanic.
What kind of model cars had he?
Well, the first car he bought was a Bugatti.
Yeah.
Which I still have the.
Yeah. The Ernie Special Racer.
Yeah, UBS. Ernie Special. USR. USR, it was called.
Okay.
Ernie Special Racer. Then he started building. He got engines in from Fiat, Fiat engines.
And he'd build a body.
And they'd build
a body.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did he do something with a leprechaun?
That's the leprechaun.
Oh,
they made that.
Yeah, there was leprechaun 1, 2, and 3.
Why did he do that? I mean,
because that was his hobby. When he wasn't working in the factory, he loved racing cars, and he'd be out there with Fangio and Stirling Moss and what was the other? Beera, Prince Beera.
Where would
it was
he
a gent in the Phoenix Park in Dundrod Hill Climbs. He was in Silverstone. He was.
How popular were these races?
Unbelievably popular. Unbelievably popular. Because they were actually racing on the roads.
How successful was he?
Very successful at that.
Was he good?
Yeah, he loved it.
Yeah, he would. There weren't very many Irish racing drivers at that time. So he would have been,
I think he raced in France as well at one stage.
But it was a gentleman's sport.
Oh, yeah.
You had to have the money to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So they were obviously well-to-do at that stage and had the money.
The factory was going well.
Okay, so Redmond, his father then, asked him to give up racing.
Yeah, because at this stage now Redmond was married and had 2 kids. And the father said, look, I think it's about time you kind of got a hold of yourself. And
did he do that?
Oh, he did, yeah.
He gave it up completely.
He never gave up his love of cars.
But he gave
He gave up the racing. But he always had very nice cars. That was his love in life.
Now, did he make a success of the business when he came back and took it over then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they did very well during the war.
Because of the sugar.
Yeah, because of the rations and because they were outside Britain. So they could trade where Britain couldn't, or they could supply to Britain. So they.
And what happened was they used to bring cocoa from South America.
South America, yeah.
And the cocoa would arrive in Portugal. Okay? And from Portugal, it would be shipped up to Ireland. Now, there were one or two of the boats were torpedoed or whatever. But at that time in England, there was no sugar. This is when Smurfit started sticking the bits of brown paper together to make cardboard. We're talking about the same, Michael Smurfit's father, same time. Anyway, so they were short of sugar in England. But they figured out a loophole that they could export fruit mincemeat, to England in these big cardboard drums that I'm sure Smurfit must have made, I don't know. But what they did was they used to fill the bottom of the tub with this much fruit and then they'd fill the rest of it with sugar and it was called mincemeat. So when it arrived in England, people just scooped the sugar off the top and that was how they made a lot of money at that.
Yeah, you can imagine how successful that would have been because of the advantages that they had over other places. Mm. Now, we have a box of chocolates in front of us. Have you any idea, again, chronologically, which were the early ones that were made? Any idea which brand of chocolate?
Oh, God. They're all around the same time, actually. You know, they're all the same era, all these ones.
Or are they?
Yeah, they would have been later.
What are the brand name of chocolates that were out there in the 40s?
The Celtic, the Tara chocolates. You remember the Tara brooch on the front?
That's right. No, I don't remember.
Yeah, it was a white box and it had a Tara brooch at the side.
Okay.
I remember that as a child.
At that stage, were there, you know, how popular boxes of chocolates were, and how people paid huge attention to...
I think they had a very big market in America. Mm-hmm. They sent an awful lot of stuff to America. And I think eventually they kind of linked up with some crowd in Canada, did they, over Lowry's. Chocolate crumb or something. They used to import chocolate crumb.
What other names on the Ernie chocolates were there?
There was the Bobby Burr. Mm-hmm. You really need to talk to Mary about that. She probably knows more about it. And then there was the leprechaun thing. What's that? The tin.
The tin that I had?
Yeah.
We see, I don't know much about it. That's why I've been asking for people to bring in the products, because I only have the, you know, the chew and two bar, the Bobby bar, and then the leprechaun tin. They had a whole, it was a kind of an advertising campaign. The leprechaun,
yeah.
His name was
Art
the leprechaun, and his little shenanigans. There was a whole poem written.
Did Helen have anything to do with that?
No, actually, no, she didn't.
Have you any idea who the designer, person, who?
Yes, the person who wrote the ditty was a man called Bernard Scher. Mm-hmm. He's quite a well-known writer. I think he's from Kildare. And the advertising agency that he was working for at the time, and they did all the artwork, was O'Kennedy Brindley.
Oh, yeah.
And the man who did the illustrations was Neil O'Kennedy. Mm. He used to do cartoons for the Irish Times.
Oh, yes.
It was called something, I can't remember what it was called.
He had a pen name.
Yeah, I think he did.
But the artwork was absolutely gorgeous, you know.
That's all the knowledge I have about that particular leprechaun.
Yeah.